DJ.
This is URN
University
Radio
Nottingham.
So that is quite funky. For our lovely listeners at home, we are this is no longer the mellow. Oh, hang on a moment. Wow, okay. This is news. You see, this is entertainment, listening about me struggle with technology. Basically, Zeta, you drag in your songs and idents and whatnot into the little kind of playlist window that had not been updating, and now it has. So hopefully this should permanently work. Let's see if I can drag in something now. Okay. So it kind of has half worked, it kind of half hasn't. Right, okay. Well, anyways, hello and welcome back to the third Melob Experience show. Now you may be asking yourself, what is the Melob Experience? And that is indeed a very good question. It is an hour-long brain ramble zone, sometimes with guests, sometimes without. However, if you do find us, or in this case, me for today, as we'll get into, mildly entertaining, maybe this will go beyond spoken elevator music and turn into a very enjoyable hour. And so, why the name Melob? First and foremost, when I first picked it out, it just sounded funny. You know, take my last name, Melor, add an ob, because ob makes everything funnier. And so Melob is the fantastic result. But additionally now, thanks to my wonderful co-host who could not make it today, the name works even better. Because my co-host, as I'm sure long-time listeners of all of our two prior shows will know, my co-host is called Jacob, and, you know, Jacob, as you might say. Add that onto Melor, you know, and then you get Melor. It all comes together into a nice sort of symphony? Symphony. I'm assuming that's the word. Symphony of perfectness. And so in this show, I plan to have three regular sections as well as a special section. But as I'm sure long-time listeners are also aware, oftentimes this sort of planning falls apart. And so the three regular sections today consist of books, what a shocker, my past sort of experiences over the past 2 weeks with some shows and movies, as well as chatting about sort of my taste in music. And as for the special segment, well, as is tradition, you'll have to continue tuning in till the end to find out. And so without further ado, I'm your host, Ben, and I'm joined in spirit by my co-host, Jacob. However, he is not here. He is in London. And so sort of moving into the first topic of the day, as I mentioned, books. I do actually have a particular sort of book series, book alternate universe that I want to talk about today. And this is my experience with the sort of World of the Shadowhunters. By the author Cassandra Clare. Wikipedia is now telling me that her official name is Judith Lewis, but Cassandra Clare is her pen name. What is a pen name? Let's see. A pen name? Oh, it's a pseudonym adopted by an author. Okay. But I shall be calling them Cassandra Clare, for that's the name that appears on the books. I didn't know that this would already become such a rabbit hole, but there you go. And so sort of the Shadowhunters universe started out with sort of a book, what will later become a book sextology, called The Mortal Instruments. And so basically this follows the storyline of, because I will get into why I have not read this particular sextology, this follows the storyline of Clary, who basically... by chance is sort of brought into the world of the Shadowhunters, I admittedly don't know much about the sextology, which is set in New York, but I do know a hell of a lot about it. Can I say hell? I'm going to assume that that is not sort of limited by watersheds. A hell of a lot more about the trilogy, which I actually have read, also set in the Shadowhunters universe. The Infernal Devices, which is very nicely sat on my bookshelf in its own little sort of case, even though like it's kind of a very bad case. It's literally just like the thinnest, like sort of cardboardy paper folded rubbish you've ever seen in your life. You know, I keep it because I'm sentimental and I do not wish to chuck it away. But basically, the Infernal Devices follows, not Clary, it follows a lady called Tessa Gray within London during the 1800s, the late 1800s, and it follows sort of her experience in searching for her missing brother. And as it transpires, the allies that she finds within London, after sort of accidentally kind of being kidnapped, spoiler alert, by the way, I'm not very good at sort of knowing what is spoilers and what's not, so just assume, you know, we're going to just be jumping well on into the plot, so, you know, you have been warned. But sort of, so Tessa Gray is sort of searching for her missing brother, kind of accidentally gets kidnapped by some evil lady, if my reading not memory serves me correct. But then, you know, she is eventually freed by the demon-slaying Shadow Hunters, meeting two particular chaps called Will and Jem, who sort of are, as the Goodreads biography describes, are the mysterious boys she's attracted to. Because as we know, can't have a good sort of young adult fiction book without sort of a little sprinkle of romance. You gotta chuck it on in there. But yes, so the first book in that sort of trilogy is Clockwork Angel. It then goes on to, I am regretting not actually physically bringing the books with me now, it goes on to Clockwork Angel, then Clockwork Prince, and then Clockwork Princess. Clockwork Angel is a reference to sort of this charm necklace thing that Tessa wears around her neck at all times, which, you know, spoiler alert, as it transpires, has some like sort of weird mystical powers imbued into it. You know, if I had read the books last week, I could probably elaborate a bit more, but unfortunately it has been a while since I read it. In fact, on Goodreads it does tell you when you finished reading books, so if you bear with a potential moment of silence as I run out of filler words to say, searching my Goodreads profile, speaking slower to drag this out as I continue scrolling down. There's Harry Potter. Still searching. Still searching. Almost there. Almost there, I promise. We'll get there. Please bear with. Do apologise. This is getting very dragged out now. Okay. Ah, there we are. So, I actually read this, read this trilogy from the, I can tell you the exact date if you fancy to hear, from the 27th of January. I read it, that's when I read the first book, and I finished the final book on the 6th of Feb. So I read this in a very sort of quick time span, because evidently I was in sort of a very big sort of reading mood. I'll get into that as a separate tangent very soon. But so sort of my thoughts on the trilogy, I would give all of the books personally 5 stars, you know, because I really sort of enjoyed the storyline. I must say it was sort of, at least for the first book, it did take me sort of the first 100 pages or so to really sort of get into it. But boy, once I got into it, it was good. It was good. It was just a very sort of gripping and engaging trilogy. You know, it's one, 5 stars on all 3 books. You know, it's one that I would recommend myself. But that is quite the contrast to how I actually found the prior mentioned Sixtology of the Mortal Instruments. So the trilogy that, for clarification, the trilogy that I read and enjoyed, set in the Shadow Hunters universe, is the Infernal Devices trilogy, which is set in London with Tessa Gray. The one that I tried to start and did not enjoy was the Mortal Instruments, set in New York, which has sort of 6 books within it, following Clary something. Let's see if it tells me. Clary... No, I do not know the last name. Didn't help that I didn't finish reading the book. But yeah, so in comparison to sort of really enjoying sort of the first trilogy, unfortunately I did not have as good a time with sort of City of Bones, which is the first book in the Sixtology. And I have all 6 books sat on my shelf because I brought all 6 because I thought, ooh, you know, I really enjoyed the trilogy, I'll get into this and it'll be sort of great and fantastic. Yeah, it didn't pan out. It's the only book on my Goodreads that I actually have sort of in my DNF category. It's the only book where I've started and I was just like, oh God, I just can't finish this. You know, I'm sure it's of enjoyment to sort of quite a lot of people. Let's see if I can see what the average rating is. Yeah, so the average rating for City of Bones is a 4.08 out of 5. So, you know, if you equated that to out of 10, it would be an 8 out of 10. Wouldn't be my rating, but that is simply because, I don't know, I think it's because City of Bones was sort of the first book written by... I could be very wrong here. I don't wish to be wrong. Let's have a look. So City of Bones, my assumption was correct, was the first book written by Cassandra Clare in the sort of Shadowhunter universe. And I don't know, I think maybe that's why I didn't enjoy it. Maybe it just wasn't as well written, purely because it was the first attempt. You know, it's like my absolute all-time favourite author, Alice Oseman. You know, her first book, Solitaire, which I'm absolutely in love with. I've read it, no joke, I've reread it 7 times. And I imagine for some people that would be rookie numbers, but for me, that is my most reread book. Yeah, it's just, you know, I can tell in Solitaire that sort of the writing style is more, I wouldn't say amateur, I mean, it's, you know, a fully published book, but you can tell that sort of as you continue reading the later works, you know, they've developed as an author. And so, you know, I wouldn't recommend Solitaire to everyone, despite my just undying love for it, because the thing is that, you know, just the writing style, the way it is, it's just not for everyone. You know, perhaps that's what happened with City of Bones. It's just not for me. But either way, it's the only book where I just did not finish it. And it's quite a shame. I was looking forward to sort of crunching through all 6 books, but just the story didn't grip me as much, which is quite a shame, especially because the sort of first trilogy, the Infernal Devices trilogy, is currently, as it stands, the only record holder of a book series that has made me sort of tear up at the end, because big spoiler alert, after sort of the Infernal Devices trilogy ends, in the final book called Clockwork Princess, there is an epilogue. It's not the actual ending of the story that made me cry, but it's an epilogue, because basically, to summarise it very nicely, Tessa Gray, through one means or another, by being someone very special, to summarise, just casually becomes immortal. And as well, sort of, Jem, am I getting this the right way around? Yes, I think it is Jem that is also immortal. Jem becomes what is known as one of the Silent Brothers, although that is a deep dive for another time. I don't know, maybe it's a deep dive for later today, but it's they both become immortal, but originally, so sort of Tessa is attracted to both Will and Jem, and you know, during sort of when she was actually sort of, you know, living her life in the 19th century, where the books are set, you know, she falls in love with Will and marries him and has children and yada yada yada, but because Will is not sort of Will wasn't immortal, sort of what the epilogue deals with is the fact that sort of, as Tessa states, you know, perfectly ageless, well I suppose like aged like what, 20, but not like literal zero age, but you know, remained unchanged from 20, and as Will sort of gets older and, you know, passes away, you know, it is quite sad. And then you sort of have, you know, and as a result of sort of witnessing everyone, you know, this is getting quite dark, I do apologize, but sort of after witnessing everyone that Tessa, you know, loves, and including her own children, get old and, you know, kapoof, you know, she sort of flees and runs away and disappears. But she did stay in contact with Jem, who's one of the original partners in sort of the trilogy, who is also, as it transpires, immortal by being one of the Silent Brothers, which is sort of an organization of a subset of Shadowhunters, who are like specially trained and like have their eyes taken out, stuff like that, wear hoods all the time. But so they eventually meet up in, I think it was 2011, sort of the setting in the epilogue, and they both meet up, and Tessa's like, okay, I'm obviously immortal, and Jem is like, whoa, I left the Silent Brothers, I'm now like human. And so they both decide to kind of start a new life, and a chap called Magnus Bane, who does have his own spin-off book, who you know, this is the first time I'm mentioning Magnus Bane. This is probably very confusing to follow for someone who is not into books, but you know, this is what we're here for. We're here to experience sort of brain ramblings rather than anything coherent. Sort of Magnus Bane, you know, well, you don't know, which is what I'm going to say, who is another sort of immortal vampire, I think he is. A vampire or some other sort of immortal creature within sort of the universe. He basically says to Tessa, you know, ooh, you're lucky in life. Some people struggle to find their one true love. I don't know why I'm doing an accent, but you know, Tessa, you found two. And, like, and you know, it's good. To summarize, in a nutshell, it's good. And so, you know, that is why I sort of really, you know, actually coming back to my original point of I really enjoyed the epilogue. You know, it made me tear up because it's like, oh, you know, they've reunited after, like, what, 100 years? And, you know, life point a 2.0, reliving that. And so sort of going into sort of a bit of background, sort of my reading of sort of the Shadowhunter, well, the trilogy that I have read within the Shadowhunter universe, the Infernal Devices. The way I actually sort of discovered it was because I had a friend from my former secondary school called Henegate Science College, which is technically not true anymore. It's now called Henegate Academy, but I will never, never, ever refer to it as Henegate Academy, because that, anything with the word academy in, unless it's like some, like, unless it's a TV show, it just sounds so bad. I mean, you know, this might be a controversial opinion, but I just don't like it. It's like sort of when British schools call themselves a high school. Like, no, go away, please, get in the bin. No one wants you to be called a high school. It's to me, it's cringe. I don't know whether this is just like my own personal sort of gripe with sort of American terminology. But anyways, back to the point. Henegate Science College is how it will always be in my heart. That's a topic for another day. But yeah, so a friend I had from sort of Henegate Science College, you know, doxing myself, whoops-a-daisy, but I'm not there anymore, so I'm safe. Yeah, basically, I had a friend from there who recommended me sort of this trilogy, said, oh, you know, it's really good, very emotional, this, that, and the other. And well, the rest is history. I went and picked up, well, I picked up the first book, read it, really enjoyed it, refunded that book, then purchased the trilogy so I could get it in a nice box, and finished it, polished it off last year, and you know, here we are sat now chatting about it, well, chatting about it with you, my sort of imaginary, well, maybe not imaginary, I do know that at the very least my family's listening, and so, hello, Andrew Mellor, number one fan, I'm sure, but yeah, sort of chatting about it to myself. You know, maybe this is like the delusions of a madman. You know, I'm sat here chatting to myself and secretly, you know, this actually isn't going live and I'm just slowly losing it. Hopefully that's not the case. But what was my point? Something about how I discovered the show. Discovered the books, you know, just a recommendation from a friend. That's the sort of nice, nice, easy answer to give. And so, yeah, I would recommend The Infernal Devices very heavily, especially if you like sort of heavier, you know, heavier storylines. Wouldn't personally recommend The Mortal Instruments Sextology. Just not my cup of tea. By the later books, you know, it might be very enjoyable, but just couldn't get my head around the first one. You know, that just doomed me, basically. But yeah, so that is sort of the summary of that. Interestingly, there is actually a Netflix show, which probably, you know, given it's on Netflix, probably is more widely known, called Shadowhunters, based on the Sextology. And I've always been sort of been put off reading it because... reading a Netflix show? No. Watching the Netflix show because I didn't like the first book. And so it's like, well, you know... And I also heard mixed things about it as well. But looking at sort of... Yeah, on Rotten Tomatoes, sort of... It's got a 68% audience score, which is, it's all right, but it's nothing special. And I just read that apparently it's not very faithful to the source material, even though I didn't like the source material. you know, that is sort of important to me. So you never know. For, you know, anonymous listener, you might have watched Shadowhunters. It might have been the greatest thing you've ever seen in your life. And if it is, be sure to sort of, you know, tweet at me, Ben, you are dumb and so wrong. meh. And I will actually get around to watching it, and maybe that will be the discussion next time. You never know. You just never know. But it, I did actually, when I was reading it, as sort of like a little tidbit, I did actually split it up. So I read something much more lighthearted in the middle of reading the trilogy called I'll Be Home for Christmas, which is a spin-off of the book by Mason Deaver, I Wish You All the Best. You know, very nice and lighthearted, you know. I would recommend something nice, short, sweet to just sort of split it up, because it's a heavy one. But sort of with my final review of, yes, I would recommend The Infernal Devices, I think that's all I have to speak about on books. Unless I start sort of going off the deep end and ranting about every book I've ever read, but then I would have nothing to talk about in the next show. Although as an update, currently getting a reader's block, I imagine that's, I have read that that's a sort of common thing. Some, you know, you'll read like four books in a week and then you won't read anything for a month. Currently in the not reading anything for a month stage, you know, really sort of blocked, like just mentally sort of not in the zone for reading at the moment, which is quite sad, because I'm currently reading Twilight of all things, which I've discussed about in a previous show. But once that's done, I will bring it back for review on the show, hopefully with Jacob next time, perhaps another guest. But that's everything I have about books. So I will play a nice little transition song, and then afterwards you will have to join me for my little chat about basically a lot of visual content. I say visual content because it's like movies, a mixture of stuff that I sort of watched over the past 2 weeks, and so, you know, we'll be having a little natter about that. But for the one transition song, I actually managed to get loaded into Zeta before I just decided to kick and scream and cry. All the Things She Said by, I believe it's Tattoo, I don't know if it's T-A-T-U, but All the Things She Said, banger, nice noughties nostalgia. So please do enjoy listening to that while I get ready for the next segment.
This is URN.
Yes, I lost my mind.
University Radio Nottingham.
Nottingham. And hello. Welcome back to the Melob Experience Show. We have moved on from books, or have we? Because I actually have one little notage. The wonderful Izzy Morris, who is currently sat in the office doing productive things, ran in during the song break to basically say, Ben, you are absolutely correct. City of Bones is... Can't say the words she used before nine. But yes, Magnus Bane Supremacy was the parting message she gave me before heading back to the office. So I feel vindicated, you know. There is at least one listener. I've disproven my prior theory of, you know, perhaps this is all a simulation and I am just slowly going mad. But yes, so moving on to things I have watched sort of prior. Basically, there's sort of three sort of things that I want to cover in this segment. I realise that I'm already like halfway through my showtime. Wow, who knew? And I still have, like, I'm technically in the second segment. I have two more to go. My timing is not just on, you know, on the ball today. But you know what? We can cut down the music one short because we always like cutting out segments here. But sort of, yeah, moving on to things that I've sort of watched recently. I have sort of three things I want to cover. You know, I actually have a bit of structure today. You know, I'm on the ball. Not on the ball with my laptop charge, but, you know, I have my hands pressed in prayer, hoping that it lasts for the rest of the show. I'm sure, you know, my mum listening at home is saying, you know, should be prepared, charge your laptop. But you know what? We live dangerously. And so, yeah, so sort of the three things I want to cover today is chatting about Arcane. I'm very sad that I did not have the foresight to get a fellow Arcane mega fan who also really likes the show on. You know, as you can probably tell, I didn't do much guest preparation considering I'm sat here alone, but you know what? Oh well. Yes, and then so also in addition to Arcane, which I watched admittedly not over the past 2 weeks, but I it's been in my bank to talk about on air for quite a while. I also went last Tuesday, I believe it was Tuesday. Yes, it was Tuesday. I went last Tuesday to see a movie with one of my greatest of friends, who just decided, just in the middle of the day, just, you know, ring ring, hello Ben, would you like to just go see a movie tonight? I'm like, okay then. So we went and saw the film Uncharted, which I only thought was like a video game. Turns out it is also both a video game and a TV show and now a movie. But you know, as we know, I live under a rock. This show is partly about my education into the world of normal human knowledge. And so yeah, went and watched Uncharted, which I have sort of a few things to little sort of discuss about. And then also just finally sort of a little sort of mention about Heartstopper, which as any sort of fellow Alice Oseman fans might know, is a graphic novel series by Alice Oseman, published online and in printed volumes. But that is coming to Netflix. It's having a Netflix adaptation, and that is coming very soon. So, sort of starting with Arcane, my only problem is that I don't really know where to start, because if I had to summarize it very sort of quickly, I love this show. Because I, as I'm sure you're probably aware, I don't watch many things. And I'm usually not a fan of just watching like Netflix shows or movies in the first place anyways, simply because it's like a large commitment of time. You know, like say for a book, you can read a page, bam, put it down, you know, read a page the next day. Sort of with like, a show. I mean, it's not as bad as a movie, but like you got to like sit there for, you know, an hour. Maybe that's just a problem with my attention span. I don't know. But yeah, you just got to like sit and commit yourself to, you know, sitting and watching. But my God, it was so worth it, because basically, well, I mean, sort of the Rotten Tomato. I don't speak American. The Rotten Tomato scores speak for themselves. It has a 96% average audience score, which I'm assuming is very high. You know, I'm not that accustomed to Rotten Tomato. I said it again, Rotten Tomato scores. What's the tomato meter? Some of all the season, blah, blah, blah. Apparently, it's got a 100% tomato meter score. Why not? And a 96% audience score, which is absolutely... I'm surprised it's not 100%, to be honest, because to sort of summarise the show, it focuses on... Well, if it focuses... There's no... It's hard to say that whether there is a main character, because, it, you know, it focuses on, you know, quite a few people. But... The sort of main notable ones is sort of the conflict between the sisters of Vi and Jinx. Vi is sort of this punch everything, short, pink-haired sort of... I was going to say the word brute, but that is very unfair and not fitting at all. Maybe solve everything by punching it. That's the summary. Big boxer. And then Jinx is sort of like the little sister, kind of cocked a lot of... Cockrelled, because cockerel is not sort of a, you know, cockerel is the word that I was meant to say there. Cockroach, sort of, you know, cockroached everything, well, not everything, but cockroached a lot of things up. And yeah, it caused a lot of conflict between the two. And so this sort of divide sort of spreads amongst sort of the rest of the characters. I realize I'm doing a very bad job of explaining this because I don't know where to start, but okay, I'll start from the very beginning. So sort of the setting of the show is within sort of the fictional universe of League of Legends, which, you know, my problem in convincing some of my friends to watch this show is that League of Legends is known for being, you know, quite a toxic game, but you don't need to know anything about League of Legends the game, or you don't even need to know it exists to enjoy the show Arcane, because Arcane, it stands on its own two feet. It's not like using the game's lore. If anything, it's just literally like borrowing the characters and then building upon it in such like a magnificent way. Magnificent because I think the show is magnificent. But either way, within sort of the fictional League of Legends universe, there is a particular city-state known as Piltover, which also has sort of a problem with this, what is referred to as an underground city known as Zorn, because basically, to summarize, scientists did a little trolling a very long time ago, and the kind of ground literally just like split, and there's a load of fissures in the ground, and within sort of underground with a load of toxic fumes and everything is the sort of what is called the undercity of Zorn, which is like the very poor part of Piltover. It's, you know, very sort of not a pleasant place to be, basically. But this is where sort of our two, you know, heroines, Vi and Jinx, come from. This is where they grew up. This is where, grew up as long as they could before things happened in the show. But yes, so that's the sort of setting. And Piltover is this very sort of prim and proper sort of... Imagine sort of the best analogy I can think of is like if you've ever seen or watched The Hunger Games, which I haven't, but I am aware of like the main sort of city in The Hunger Games. You know, the one where sort of The Hunger Games is made to sort of entertain those like posh people that are like so up themselves and have all the power. That is sort of like what the worst part of Piltover is like. So sort of. It's just, I've not done a good job of explaining the show. I've not done it justice at all. I will, the only sort of way I can work around this is sort of actually getting another person on to just rave about Arcane with. But, you know, the storytelling, like the visuals, of, it is an animated show. The visuals are absolutely beautiful. It's rich, it's just so stunning. And like, literally you could pause the show at any stage and boom, you've got like a screen, you've literally just got a screen grab there for like a back, to, like a desktop wallpaper. But it's not just sort of the visuals being, it's not like, oh, it looks very nice. But the storytelling and the writing and the animation itself is just so, so just on the money. It's just a perfect show. If I had to recommend anything, I would actually recommend Arcane above my like all-time favorite book, which I've read 7 times. That's sort of the level we're talking about. And also, as sort of anyone who knows about anything about my reading preferences will know, I love anything with sort of that nice little sort of subtle sort of sub, like not the main plot, but it's got sort of that like subplot of sort of romance as well. Arcane does have that between the main characters of Vi and also the main character known as Caitlin. It's almost sort of like a yin and yang thing. Vi, you know, as I mentioned, sort of very from the poor undercity, very sort of, you know, punch everything in the face. And then Caitlin is this sort of protected, very shielded by the parents, posh, sort of daughter of one of like the leading politicians of Piltover. But despite that, you know, Caitlin wants to go out and actually sort of make a name for herself. And yeah, it is just the dynamic. Like, the thing is like the romance isn't sort of forced in there. I could go on for a whole hour about sort of how brilliantly written just the sort of romance between Vi and Caitlin is. But I do not have an hour, so I cannot do that. Not an hour left anyways. But it's just, it develops so naturally, and it just, the chemistry works. It just works, full stop. So sort of rounding it out, because I do actually have two other things I'm supposed to be talking about. Go watch Arcane. That is sort of my summary. Just watch it, you know. And it also recently won, it was like nine. It recently won 9 Annie Awards. Every award it was nominated for in the Annie Awards, which I believe, I don't actually know what the Annie Awards are. Either way, it's the 49th annual Annie Awards, so it's been going for a long time. It won every category it was nominated in, just to sort of add fuel to my fire. Sort of departing from Arcane, before I get hung up on that for the remaining 16 minutes, I went and watched the film Uncharted with my friend, who just rang me up and said, "Do you want to go see this film?" I'm like, "Okay, I have nothing better to do on a Tuesday evening," and so I went and watched it. And it's quite interesting because the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is 90%, which is good, but the kind of aggregate reviews from the critics is actually only 41%. Like, I read that sort of it wasn't decent, but yet the audience score liked, like fancy pantsy reviewers didn't like it, but the audience did. So that's a fair summary, I feel. Because I think one of the criticisms is that it didn't really bring anything new to the sort of adventure-y, Indiana Jones-y sort of category of films. Well, having not seen any films, including the Indiana Jones films, I can't really comment on whether that's true or not. All I know is that it was just like a good time. The only thing is that I did have to keep looking down from the cinema screen because it kept making me motion sick. But other than that, it was a fantastic time. So blitzing through, if I had to put a stamp of approval, I'd say if you've got sort of nothing, you know, if you're, you know, going to the cinema just for a bit of fun, watch it. Why not? What have you got to lose? And then finally, as well, because time really is pressing on, it turns out I'm good at waffling. The Heartstopper Netflix adaptation, its trailer got released very recently, and it's looking good. The casting looks perfect. So, you know, I can't big that up enough. But it also just looks like it's going to be a good show. And I really hope it is, because the graphic novels are really good. You know, I think that's been the summary of most of the things I've said. But it's really good. Take my word for it, please. I promise. And so, yeah. It does... that's the whole point. It has a release date on April the 22nd, just slightly over a month from now. I believe it will be a month on Tuesday. Heartstopper will premiere on Netflix, and please do go watch it, because it is a graphic novel series that I really enjoy. It's by, you know, the script has been written by the author that I really enjoy, and it'll just be nice to see it do well, especially because Netflix is getting quite crowded with really good new shows at the moment, so, you know, don't want it to get falling behind. But yeah, that sort of rounds up everything that I wanted to talk about, sort of visually, that I've seen recently. And you're also probably not surprised to hear, long-time listeners, that I will have to cut a section because of time constraints. So bye-bye music section. We will have to get into my weird Spotify playlists another time, because there is no rhyme or reason to them. But I was actually going to play my 2 all-time favourite songs, but looking at the time, I don't actually think I have enough time to play them. So, I have to pick between the two. Right, I'm going to get a coin flipper on Google right now, because My all-time two favourite songs, Irreplaceable, is Crawling by Linkin Park and Sleepwalking by Bring Me the Horizon. And I do not know which of the two to play. So I'll say heads for Crawling, tails for Sleepwalking. Let's go. Flip a coin. And it is... heads. So it is Crawling by Linkin Park. What, like, joint all-time favourite song of mine. So... please do enjoy that listening, and you'll be joining me for not the musical section, which doesn't exist anymore. You'll be joining me for the special segment. Welcome back. This is a very brief thing from me because there is potentially, unconfirmed, but potentially no show after me. So I'm going to take a risk and I'm going to play Sleepwalking as well. And I will just have to work with the time that I have left if another show does turn up. So please do enjoy Sleepwalking. And after that, we'll be coming back to be listening to, I can reveal, Jacob. Well, I'll reveal that Jacob is in London for an a cappella semi-final. So do join us after that, after Sleepwalking, for a little chat about that.
URN.
So that was, you've just listened to my two all-time favourite songs, the former being Crawling by Linkin Park, My Little Interlude, and then what you just listened to was Sleepwalking by Bring Me the Horizon, who I'm currently wearing a hoodie of theirs actually at the moment, a hoodie themed in the song of Kingslayer, which came out in their latest EP. This is going to be embarrassing, I forgot the name. Post-Human Survival Horror, that's what I think it is. So moving on to the special segment, which I kind of alluded to, the reason why Jacob actually isn't here is because he's currently, as a member of sort of one of the a cappella groups at the university, he is taking part in I could be wrong, but it's a final of some kind. I think, based on my own sort of counting, it's the semi-finals, but it's a final of some kind. The semi-finals or finals for this like massive sort of national a cappella competition, because he's part of the group. Actually, I think I might have the name of the group somewhere. No, I don't. Okay. Just take my word for it, he's in one of the a cappella groups here. And I think, I can't remember if he is on committee for one. He might not be, I don't know. That might be my brain going funky. But yeah, he is down in London at the moment, and he very graciously did give me an invite to go down there and watch him and, you know, the rest of the group that he's a part of perform live in sort of these finals. But I was, you know, a little bit nervous about getting down to London. So that is why I am sat here instead in a student studio at 3:57, almost couldn't read a clock there. So he's down there, but probably performing right now. I mean, I don't know what time. I mean, the contest, sort of the different groups are performing all day long, but you know, he might be performing right now for all I know. I am wishing him the best of luck, especially because if they win this, it's got to be a semi-final because there's a final after, but if he wins this sort of final in London, the next final is set in New York. This is not sort of a euphemism of the city of York in the north of England. This is the actual New York in the United States of America. And my God, for an a cappella competition, that is crazy. I certainly could not, you know, go to New York even as part of like a URN competition, like, you know. But I really do wish him all the best. And what is going to make this special segment take up quite a bit of time is he has very graciously given me the recordings of what was the quarterfinals back in January of this year, and I'm going to play quite a bit of that for you now. The length of the recording that I have is 9 minutes. I don't know if I'm going to play the whole 9 minutes. We'll see. We'll see how we do. But no, honestly, from what sort of little bit I got while editing it to trim out some silent parts, you know, it does sound really amazing. I mean, a cappella isn't something I really knew existed before I met Jacob, but it's I think from what I've gathered, it is like an entire like sort of performance using your voice as an instrument alongside singing. But it's really, really cool. So I'm going to play some of this for you now. This is a phone recording within sort of the sort of massive stadium where the quarterfinals in January took place. So I don't know whether the whole thing will have perfect audio quality, but it's good. So we'll have a nice little tune into that, maybe for the full 9 minutes, maybe not, but I shall see you back whenever I decide to bring this show to a close. And I'm back. So I thought that was like sort of, there is still 6 more minutes of, well, 6 minutes, 41 more seconds of sort of the recording that could go on, sort of the, you know, rest of the performance. But I feel like that sort of like little clapping interlude was a good time to sort of reel it back before I really sort of overrun. Mainly because, not because I don't want to do a 2-hour Mellob Experience show, that would be incredible, but also because the show record, purely for editing purposes, getting the show recordings, it is split into hour segments with a 5-minute buffer, and if I go over that, it will be a nightmare to try and merge them together in posting the full show. So that is a laziness bend decision, but what I will do is I will message Jacob to see, you know, if acapella is sort of really a thing, because I, you know, it sounds really good to me. Nice sort of like ambience, but like ambietic, I don't know, but it, you know, I really sort of enjoyed sort of listening to it, so I'll see if I can get sort of the full, that full recording posted onto our Twitter, which is, forgetting my own Twitter handle here, this is a little embarrassing, it is melobshow_urn, so that is melobshow_urn on Twitter, so I'll probably be posting a nice little picture of Jacob in London, as well as sort of the recordings on there, so be sure to sort of, you know, have a look at that, and so sort of I feel like that this is sort of like a nice little point to end the show. I've really sort of discussed all the segments apart from the music, but I also don't want to take 500 years here. This is a nice little place to end the show. And so what I shall do is, I feel as though my parents, who are dutifully listening in, have had enough of me playing sort of heavier songs. So I will close off with a banger, a nice noughties banger. It's not even noughties, it's 2010s. Oh god, evidently I don't know my music. But just a banger. Thank you. I've been your host, Ben, on today's Mellow Experience show. Be sure to listen in again in 2 weeks' time for our next show, where hopefully Jacob will be able to join me again. But thank you for your time. This is Written in the Stars with Tiny Temper and Eric Turner. If I can get this to play.
This
is URN.
Song on so many different dials, cause I got more hits than a disciplined child. So when they see me, everybody barack, barack. Man, I'm like a young gun, fully black, barack. I try teardrops over the massive attack. I only make hits like I work with a racket and back. Look at my jacket and hat, so damn bizarre, so down to earth. I'm bringing gravity back, adopted by the major. I want my family back. People work hard just to get all their salary tax. Look, I'm just a writer from the ghetto like Mallory Black. Man, where the hell's all the sanity at? Damn, I used to be the kid that no one cared about. That's why you have to keep screaming till they hear you out.